Support for WPR comes from WIPS with Toward One Wisconsin, a conference on equity, diversity, and inclusion, May 7th and 8th in Eau Claire. Registration information and more is at t1w.org.
Support for WPR comes from 4imprint, providers of promotional products for businesses, including embroidered apparel, trade show items, and logoed business gifts. More is at 4imprint.com. 4imprint, for certain.
Despite freezing rain and snow, voter turnout beat expectations yesterday. Clerks reported signs of strong turnout, and we'll comb through the election results here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We'll begin with the most high-profile race, as Milwaukee County Circuit Court Judge Rebecca Dallet handily defeated Sauk County Circuit Court Judge Michael Skrenek. Governor Scott Walker tweeted last night that the results show that, quote, we are at risk of a blue wave in Wisconsin. Let's bring in Alicia Von Hagel. She's an associate professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Superior. Alicia, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, voters elected Judge Rebecca Dallet to join Wisconsin Supreme Court, filling the seat that was held by Justice Michael Gableman, who did not seek a second term. Dallet's election marks the first time in 23 years that a liberal contender who is not an incumbent won a seat. Let's hear her at her victory speech.
Friends, I ran with two things in mind. We need to restore independence to the judiciary, and we have to put Wisconsin values front and center. And that's what I've talked about. And that's what I've talked about throughout the entire campaign. Special interests definitely are having their impact, and it's on both sides of the aisle. That's why I pledged I will recuse myself if any of those special interests that supported me appear before me. Tonight we proved that when the people rise up and stand together, we can beat the special interests.
Alicia, what does Dallet's election mean for the state?
It is quite a distinguished win, that, as you mentioned, the first liberal to win, non-incumbent liberal to win in over 20 years. And it reflects a larger wave, not only, as Walker mentioned, perhaps a blue wave for Wisconsin, but what's going on across the nation. We see that special elections across the nation, districts that have voted for Trump or that have consistently had Republican-leaning electorate are leaning Democrat and are going, are moving left in these special elections. And so the Republicans have lost over 30 seats since inauguration in special elections. And so this is, I think, part of a larger national trend that's occurring since the inauguration in 2017.
We'll get to special interests in a moment and the cash that was poured into this election. But Dallet's opponent, Sauk County Circuit Court Judge Michael Skrenek, he talked to supporters last night about how he was proud of his campaign and what's next for him.
I don't know long term what the future holds, but I do know that I've got a great job. I love serving Sauk County and the people of this county, and I am excited to continue that work.
He also says he'll be back to work today there. He also issued a statement that read, quote, I am proud to have run a campaign that remained focused on my judicial philosophy and my experience in spite of tremendous outside influence from liberal special interest groups that were willing to say and spend anything to elect their preferred candidate to the bench, unquote. Spending in this race made huge headlines, was expected to exceed $2 million. Should we be mindful of the cash that was poured into this race?
Well, I mean, absolutely. I mean, it definitely is, again, indicative of longer trends that are occurring in the past few election cycles. And now it's reaching judicial elections, which I guess is perhaps something that hasn't always been the case until most recently, but also seems, I think, a little bit more problematic for voters when we have all of this money from outside interest groups coming in for judicial elections sits a little uneasy, perhaps, as compared to this money being involved in elections for representatives, given the task or the job that judges have to do. And so, as he mentioned, as both candidates mentioned, this role of the outside influence or the role of this outside groups may, you know, be an issue in the future when these particular interest groups come before the bench in a case. And so Dalit did mention she would recuse herself. But, you know, this certainly is a big issue in terms of not only that particular example, but also what we're looking forward to in the future in terms of not only judicial elections, but elections coming down the road. And given the amount of money that was spent in a special election, I mean, it's really quite unbelievable that, you know, this amount of money and this amount of attention is given to a special election that usually has 20% turnout at best. And so it's really unbelievable to think what money will be spent in the fall election cycles.
Midterms, right. We're recapping Tuesday's election with Alicia Van Hagel, who is with us. She's an associate professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Superior. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you make of the election of Judge Rebecca Dalit to the Wisconsin Supreme Court? The court's conservative majority has been lessened by this vote. Are you worried about future rulings, or is this a good thing for the state? 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Let's bring in Mark now, joining us from Mineral Point. Hi, Mark. What's your reaction?
Yeah, good morning. I think one of the most interesting things about this is that the usual playbook for the billionaire-backed candidate didn't work. And usually the outside money from Koch brothers and other billionaire class groups can carry the day. And I think the reason is what I would call corruption fatigue. And it was tied into the issue of recusal, because I think people have realized that the candidates that have gotten this big billionaire class money in the past have gone on the court and done the bidding of their paymasters, the billionaires, the Koch brothers. And I think people are finally catching on to the fact that this narrative, the usual narrative that the left-leaning candidate is activist and the right-wing candidate is not activist, people have realized that's false. And they've seen the corruption of Ziegler and Gableman and Prosser and how they're doing nothing but carrying water for the billionaires. And I think people finally caught on to that. And it doesn't bode well for the other corrupt people like Scott Walker and Donald Trump.
Mark, let's bring in some analysis here from Elisa. Was the usual playbook, as Mark mentioned here, what didn't work about it? As Mark mentioned, with this usual playbook?
Well, I think in 2000, mentioning the Gableman election, that was one of the first times that we have a judicial election where one of the candidates uses the rulings of the opponent in their ad campaigns, and really in a negative fashion. And we saw that in particular with this race as well, that there was a lot of pushback against the use of the Republican candidate, or the more leaning Republican candidate, using Dalit's history and her rulings in previous cases, and how the families were very much, disheartened and dissatisfied by using that sort of very emotional, baggage, so to speak, by using it in the campaign ads. And so I think this, bringing up past rulings and using it in a way to stir up emotional reactions. And I mean, Gableman in 2008 was one of the first in Wisconsin to start using that in campaigning. And it was quite shocking at the time. And so perhaps it's, again, something that is clearly was used again and maybe used again in the future, but is something that this time around we saw that people really, a lot of people pushed back on and were very concerned with, and did not appreciate that type of campaigning and that type of rhetoric in this style or this type of election.
Governor Walker said on Twitter last night, big government special interests flooded Wisconsin with distorted facts and misinformation. Next, they'll target me and work to undo our bold reforms. What is his concern there? Dallet was supported by labor and teacher unions, most of the state's judges, and some current and former Democratic office holders. Skrinek was backed by the NRA, backed by the state Chamber of Commerce and the state Republican Party.
Right. I mean, so both parties were, you know, backed by major players within the state, but also outside the state. And so, I mean, that's just something where, you know, I think, you know, both sides had equally had the money and the backing of outside groups. And that's simply just a product of our judicial elections at this point in time. If candidates are expected to raise the amount of money that they need to be competitive, that simply is going to be the case, unfortunately, at this point in time. And so I don't have the numbers directly in front of me, but I think both were, you know, sort of comparatively using the money from outside groups at, you know, roughly the same rate. And so, you know, it's perhaps just something that we see now with this type of election.
Got to pause right there for the news on the Ideas Network. It's spring election results on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad to have you along. Judge Rebecca Dallet easily defeated conservative Michael Skrinek in a Wisconsin Supreme Court race, seen as the latest bellwether of voter attitudes ahead of the November midterms. Here's a bit from Saucony Circuit Judge Michael Skrinek's concession speech.
Judge Dallet ran a spirited campaign, and she was successful. And I wish her all the best. Last summer, she stated that her intention was to follow the law and that she was committed to the rule of law. Last week at our debates, she went back to that message. It's my hope that is who we will see as Justice Dallet, and only time will tell.
Dallet's victory cuts conservative control of the state's highest court from 5-2 to 4-3. She also becomes the sixth woman on the 7-member court. Alisa Von Hagel is here with analysis. She's an associate professor of political science at UW-Superior. You can join in with your morning after insights, your questions, 800-642-1234. With the court's conservative majority diminished, are you concerned about future rulings, or is this good for the state? What races did you watch closely? What local races impacted your community? Call in. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's go to Jan now, joining us from Monticello. Hi, Jan.
Hi, good morning. I watched the Supreme Court race very closely. I'm so happy Rebecca Dallet won. I'm not concerned at all about the less power for the conservatives on the court. I was very disappointed in the Skrinek campaign when they ran the ad about the grandfather who molested his grandchildren in Milwaukee. Even after the family asked them to pull the ad, that was paid for by the Wisconsin Manufacturers Association. It cost $966,000, and Michael Skrinek refused the pleadings of the family to take that ad off the air. And I think the Manufacturers and Commerce Association said it was legal because what they ran on the air was public record. But even if something's legal, does not make it right. So I hope we don't see this in the future.
And we should note it wasn't Skrinek's campaign, but an outside party that ran that ad, the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce there, just as Jan mentioned. Alisa, this campaign was tense at times. It was nasty at times. What do you make of that and this particular ad?
Yes, this ad certainly, as the caller mentioned, very much caused pushback by members of the community, certainly the family, who were very upset with this type of ad campaign and or this, you know, bringing up this again for them. And this is unfortunately something we're seeing in other judicial elections across the country. They, you know, previous rulings by justices that are up for election or re-election are oftentimes the base or the fodder of election ad campaigns. And so it is something that is, you know, perhaps will become more and more common. It's, as I mentioned earlier, in 2008, it was sort of first used in Wisconsin judicial elections, and it is something that we see across the country in other judicial election and other elections that are particularly contentious races.
Well, one argument between the two centered around this idea that their opponent couldn't be trusted to rule on cases fairly and remain impartial. Politics also came into play in the nonpartisan race, with liberals lining up behind Dalit and conservatives behind Skrenek. So is that unique, or is that symptomatic of a broader trend you see?
Well, I think it's symptomatic of the fact that we elect our justices, and, you know, and so what we have are individuals who we're selecting to be impartial, you know, objective, unbiased interpreters of the law that have to basically play the game, you know, in a election as any representative would. And so we're asking them to do all the things that you need to do to run a campaign, fundraise, and, you know, cater to constituents, but then, you know, switch gears and, you know, promise to always be unfair, biased, and objective. And so I think it's more reflective of the campaigning that is required for these positions now, and that those two, you know, those two facets are perhaps incompatible with each other in terms of what it means to be a justice, whether at the Supreme Court level or even, you know, at circuit courts or at any level of the courts.
Let's bring in Terry now, who's joining us from Green Bay. Good morning, Terry. Hi.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Oh, my apologies. So I think the biggest thing here that we need to take away from this is that we're only going to see, this is only going to, this partisanship with these judicial races is only going to get worse. And everyone recognizes that nobody likes outside money influencing our Wisconsin elections. And that's where the lawmakers can step up and actually do something to stop that. And that's by proposing and passing and signing into law legislation that says only money contributed to campaigns can come from Wisconsinites who can actually vote in the state or in a particular district or only in the Senate, you know, some local city council race or district. Only the money can come from those districts, because only those people actually vote to elect that person. So why should outside money be involved with our politics?
So, Terry, you're saying really clamp down on campaign finance here.
The constitutional right. I mean, yes, Citizens United gave corporations, you know, free speech. You know, their corporations are people, but they still left it up for us to regulate what that looks like. And we have that power to do that. And everyone agrees on both sides that it needs to be done, but nobody's doing it.
Alyssa, what do you make of that?
So, you know, Montana did have a similar law or a law in place after that had been in place for over 100 years in the state that extremely limited funding and spending. And after the Citizens United case, as the caller mentioned, a sort of a bellwether turning point in campaign finance. After that decision was made, it was challenged in the courts and overruled. And so I think it's again this odd circumstance of in general, we have large support for limited spending by the people, or a concern with the level of spending amongst the people, yet there seems to be enough support or enough influence at, you know, whatever level that has, you know, allowed this to continue. And I guess I guess I don't know if it's I'm a pessimist, but I don't see it happening, I think, in anytime soon in terms of limiting that people, you know, freely limiting themselves with respect to the money they have to campaign, just simply because it is so difficult in this modern elections campaigning era, in which just the amount of money needed for campaign ads, for TV ads, for, you know, the internet, for all of the ways in which they reach out to their constituents, I don't see them limiting themselves in any way, shape, or form soon. But perhaps it'll get to the point that it'll just, you know, there will be such a pushback from the people that it will occur.
Terry, thanks so much for the call. Getting your reaction morning after the spring election, 800-642-1234. Voters opted not to eliminate the state treasurer from the state's constitution. Do you think more duties should be returned to the office, or should lawmakers make another go at bringing the referendum back to the ballot? And local races, what local races affected your community? What races did you watch? Are you pleased by referenda passed for your local school or not? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Alyssa, Judge Rebecca Dalit's election means that the Wisconsin Supreme Court will be made up of 6 women and 1 man. According to the University of Minnesota, only one other state, Washington, has that many women on its highest court. But in terms of percentage, Wisconsin will have the highest amount compared to Washington, because our court has 7 seats while Washington has 9. Meanwhile, we tied with Oregon for the highest percentage of women on the court. What do you make of this news for the state?
It is indicative of the, particularly in Wisconsin and in Minnesota, we've historically been progressive, not necessarily meaning sort of liberal progressive, but progressive in terms of, you know, opening the door for more women to run for office or to be in the public sphere in many different capacities. And this is perhaps one merely example or one reflection of, you know, that coming to fruition. And so it's, I think it's fabulous to have, you know, this particular moment in time where we have, you know, so many women in this particular forum, that, and with the attention given to this election, that, you know, boys and girls, you know, will see these individuals as, you know, role models or something to look up to in the future. And I think could only be beneficial in terms of opening the door, or perhaps encouraging more women to, you know, to move into the public sphere, whether it's running for office or running in any, you know, way, shape, or form.
Yeah. What are you watching for here? I mean, could this impact the gender makeup of other high courts around the country?
I think it could. I mean, I think certainly it, you know, the fact that it happened here at the Supreme Court level, there had to be a certain number of female justices in the pipeline, so to speak, at the circuit court level, at, you know, in those higher positions that had, you know, moving up from prosecutors and lawyers to that next level to be in this position. And so certainly that pipeline needs to be, you know, have enough women to reach this capacity. But I think it definitely could show women that it is possible. It is very possible to be successful in moving on to that next stage in your career, whether it's moving from a prosecutor to a circuit judge to any type of court that you have within your state. And so I think it could be, very powerful for women within the state in any position that they're in to, you know, see that I think a lot of times that the perspective is for females campaigning, that it is very harsh and grueling, particularly for women, for different reasons. But to see this success and to see this percentage or proportion of women in office in this capacity may encourage others in, you know, in other ways, whether it's running for the school board, mayor, city council, and, you know, how that affects us around us, you know, other states, other women in other locations who are also following this race or see this, I think, again, is only beneficial or powerful for that purpose.
Well, let's look at another issue on yesterday's ballot. Wisconsinites voted to keep the office of the state treasurer in the state constitution. Opponents would have to start over and have a measure pass two consecutive sessions of the legislature before it could come back to the ballot. Do you think we should see a push to return duties to the role? What do you make of what happened to the state treasurer vote here?
I mean, I think that with the margin of victory that it was a pretty clear indication that people, the state of Wisconsin, wanted to keep and maintain this position. And I think for that, you know, for that sake, I don't know if there's perhaps there are more specific, smaller reasons for that with regard to responsibilities and obligations of that position that would want to be reviewed or whatnot. But it seems very clear that people in the state of Wisconsin want to maintain and keep this position as an elected position, as a check within the system. And so,
even though the state treasurer campaigned to get rid of this office,
I think fairly unique that a sitting officer person in a position campaigned against their position. That is a rather odd, I think, example.
And this was a ballot item which didn't have much or any polling that I can recall, and it was a real unknown as to what might happen in the end.
Right, and I think that, I mean, again, from what I understand, that is that, you know, people who are voting no on this see this position as a clear or as a check on, you know, the system as a whole, that it's an elected position for a reason. It's constitutional, and thus, you know, any efforts, any campaigning, even by the person who's in the position itself, to get rid of it, to dismantle it, is seen as eliminating a very important check. And so,
yeah, and it was created by the Wisconsin Constitution in 1848. So, it's been around a very long time, but its powers diminished over time. And even in recent years, the office basically being vacated except for the position. But what is the role of the state treasurer in 2018?
So, I mean, primarily the position that he serves is sitting on the Board of Commissioners for Public Lands for the state of Wisconsin. And so that is a very important commission within the state. The state puts up for sale a significant percentage or proportion of land for private sales. And so to be on that Board of Commissioners is a very important role. Perhaps the state treasurer could be involved in, you know, certainly have broader responsibilities or obligations. And I think that's something that's within the purview of, whether it's the executive office or the executive branch to, you know, give that position increased powers or obligations or even duties beyond that, beyond just the Board of Commissioners position. But although that in and of itself is a very significant role within the state, given the amount of, the importance or the amount of public lands that are eventually sold or used.
Voters rejected a constitutional amendment and kept Wisconsin's 170-year-old treasurer's office. We're combing through spring election with Elisa von Hagel, associate professor of political science at UW-Superior, getting your thoughts as well. We'll be back right after this news. Wisconsinites headed to the polls yesterday to vote in a number of state and local races, including a state Supreme Court seat. Judge Rebecca Dallet easily defeated Judge Michael Skrenak for a 10-year term on the High Court. The state treasurer was one of the original state officers created by the Wisconsin Constitution in 1848, and voters elected to keep the office yesterday, rejecting an amendment. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Elisa Von Hagel is here with analysis. She's our guide, associate professor of political science at UW-Superior. Getting your insights, they're welcome, 800-642-1234. Hey, did you vote yesterday? What stuck out to you about the spring election? What local races affected your community? Call in, tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's start out with Marcel joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Marcel.
Hi, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
It's not really a question. It's more like maybe when the voters came to to vote for the state treasury, maybe they chose to keep the state treasury because that could have maybe opened up the doors to take away other things from the Constitution.
Marcel, yeah. Well, let's get Alyssa there to respond to that. Would there have been a domino effect here?
I mean that could be perhaps something on voters' mind when they would be thinking about their vote on this particular subject. And so there have been a lot of changes in state government, you know, in the past number of years. And so this could certainly be on voters' minds. But as I believe you mentioned that it, you know, for an amendment to pass to change the Constitution, it does have to go through both the House and the Assembly and the Senate twice in two consecutive sessions to be passed in full and then going to the people for the vote. And so it's certainly not an easy process. It has happened before as we, you know, have amendments to the Constitution, but it could be something on voters' minds for sure, that it's something that maybe may cause a ripple or a domino effect that affects other positions, offices, but also other features of state government.
Marcel, thanks. Let's now go to Mike in St. Lawrence. Hi, Mike.
Good morning, Kate. Yes, I agree with your previous caller. Not that it was create a domino effect, but I think the people of the state of Wisconsin are tired of this Republican administration trying to take over all aspects of government. And for Walker yesterday to come out and say after the election that this is liberals trying to take control of government, that's exactly what he has done with the elimination of rules in the DNR relating to groundwater, school referendum. There's probably a whole list of things that he has, little departments he has changed here, little ads he's done there, subtractions he's done here, all to consolidate Republican power in the state of Wisconsin. And I think this was a reflection of that the people said that enough is enough. And just taking control of the Treasury would give him more power over state lands around the state that he could sell off to private organizations as he's done in the past, as he's doing right now. So I think it was a reflection. I think the people of Wisconsin said enough is enough, and they came out to vote, and this is what's going to happen, I think, in the fall, too. So anyway, that's my comment.
Well, Mike, Governor Walker tweeted last night around 10:30 or so that the results show that, quote, we are at risk of a hashtag blue wave in Wisconsin. What do you make of that tweet?
I think it's already started, and it hasn't even crested. It started out in western Wisconsin. I don't remember the exact district it was in, but the Democrat won out of there for the first time in I don't know how many election cycles. And it's going on in a couple places across the country. And I think it's all a reflection even of Donald Trump. He may be at 50 points right now, but I think underneath there's a turmoil going on, and I think people are tired of, you look at what's happening in Oklahoma and the teacher strikes. I mean, they're taking over. The cycle is going like it usually does, and I think the Democrats are on the crest of the wave right now, and they're going to ride it through.
Elisa, Mike is connecting a number of dots here. What do you make of it?
I mean, I think he's pointing to a larger issue of just the extreme polarization and partisanship that is, you know, that is just spilling over into so many aspects of how governments function and over so many issue areas that these, you know, these issues that particularly in Wisconsin have perhaps been sort of outside partisan politics for, you know, for a number of years, just by virtue of the culture and whatnot, that are just simply being, you know, pulled into this battle, this war that is, you know, that is sweeping the nation, that is making every, you know, political issue so highly partisan and polarized that it's, I completely agree with the caller that it's that, you know, people do see it perhaps as this larger phenomenon. It's not just a single, you know, example or single instance or one, you know, entity or one change, but that it's connected to all of these, this larger change that is going on in the state of Wisconsin or nationwide.
Well, more elections are on the way in the first Senate and 42nd Assembly districts to fill vacant seats. Governor Walker has called special elections in those districts, setting Election Day for June 12th. Primaries that are needed will be held May 15th. Do these special elections present any kind of challenge in that they're so soon after the spring election?
Any election that's outside of our, you know, November election cycle are generally, there's low turnout, and usually nationwide it does see those types of elections usually privilege the Republicans slightly in terms of turnout, but it's really hard to say. This election cycle got so much energy and so much attention. There were reports of record turnout. And so it's hard to say if that momentum will continue on with these special elections and continue all the way till June, or there will be some fatigue setting in and it will sort of fall off the radar, so to speak. And so it's hard to say. I mean, you know, if there's that energy and that focus and momentum of the campaigns that they're able to gather, you know, may lead to increased turnout and really, you know, continue on with this, you know, these discussions that we're having this morning in terms of whether or not it's a, you know, it's a blue sweep or, you know, whatnot. But again, if there isn't that momentum that they're able to achieve, then it usually kind of falls off the radar of voters.
Well, looking a little more closely at turnout yesterday, statewide turnout hit 21.8%. Spring elections, as you mentioned, are generally lower compared to fall elections. Madison saw strong but not record-breaking voter turnout at 32.5% for a non-presidential spring election. Anything striking you there?
Well, I think that what is interesting, and I saw projections for Milwaukee and Dane County being higher, much higher than normal. And I think what we saw there is, or what at least I didn't see, because I'm up here in the north, and so we didn't hear much about these elections or any ads or whatnot. But what I heard about, particularly in Madison, are, you know, door-to-door, you know, workers going to people to campaign, that getting the leaflets, the flyers, the you know, the knocks on doors, that there was a concerted mobilization of volunteers for the campaigns. That is something you usually don't see in these types of elections, and so you're going to have that increased turnout where you have that really on the ground organization. And so if that's something that, again, is, it certainly wasn't statewide, and it was very isolated or segregated to the more, you know, populous area of the state.
Some cities also reported high absentee voter turnout for a non-presidential spring race. What do you think is behind that?
It's a trend that has been going on. I think it's, you know, it's hard for people to, you know, people are aware of an election, and it's just hard to get to the polling station, polling location, perhaps, whether it's jobs, kids, or what have you. And so the fact that Wisconsin has no reason absentee voting In-person absentee voting just makes it easier for when people have time. There's a chance for them to go to their, you know, to wherever the location in their city is that they can cast a ballot. It is just simply easier. And I think that it only will become a growing trend for to vote this way.
Let's bring in Nate in Milwaukee very quickly here because we're running short on time. Hi, Nate.
Hi, thank you very much. I feel like the election was prodding the state Supreme Court to really return to integrity and decency, especially when there's concerns about money impacting rulings on a case. And I just add on that Walker's remark about special interests flooding Wisconsin with distorted facts and misinformation. I feel like that was ironic for him to say, because I really feel like that's been his way to campaign for the last couple elections he's run it.
Nate, thanks for the call, and we have to start wrapping up here. Elisa, really quickly, what advice would you give about this election to those weighing political strategy in the upcoming midterms in 2018?
Well, it looks, I mean, it does seem indicative that the Democrats have a, you know, have an advantage, and that there is perhaps a tide. And so for Democrats, it's certainly not to say that it's easy, you know, for any election, regardless of the level or the state. And so, but that there is seems to be a Democratic tide if they're able to capture that. And so it's really about capturing that focus and energy that seems to be mobilizing and energizing people on just on any issue, any of these issues that we've been talking about. And so it's, you know, capturing that will be the key to victory in their race.
Elisa, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me this morning.
Elisa von Hagel is an associate professor of political science at UW-Superior. This morning after spring election recap was produced by Brianne Shasso and Keely Baltina. Michael Deringer provided technical direction. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and this conversation, you find it on the Ideas Network.